Hi, and welcome to At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast, where we take a look at some of the drivers behind the biggest trends and themes across fixed income currencies and commodity markets. I'm Francis Diamond from the European Rate Strategy Team, and today I'm joined by my two colleagues, Aditya Chaudhria and Kigendra Gupta, to discuss a few different themes and hot topics for euro area rate markets. We are recording this podcast on April the 5th, and our comments today are based on our recent GFIM strategy publication, which is available to institutional clients of JP Morgan on our JP Morgan Markets website. So usually, we'd like to spend some time on these podcasts discussing upcoming central bank meetings and their potential market impact. However, I think the upcoming ECB meeting in April is probably going to be relatively uneventful. We think they'll continue to endorse a 25 basis point cut in June, but not give much guidance on the path beyond that and reassert their data-dependent approach. So instead, let's focus on some other areas of interest over the past week and some topic clients have brought up with us in discussions. So Aditya, let's turn to the fiscal backdrop in Europe that's come into focus this past week. France has recently revised their 2023 deficit significantly higher. Brent spreads did also widen on the back of that. First of all, what do you make of that move? Are there any rating implications? And I saw that you did recommending underweight France a couple of weeks ago in anticipation of this. What's changed in your mind? And do you still hold that view?
Sure, Francis. So yeah, the French Statistics Office released their first estimate of 2023 deficit, and they put a number which was 5.5% of deficit for 2023 versus the government projection of 4.9%, which they made in late 2023. So clearly a significant increase versus the initial projection, which was already talked about in media going into this release. So not a surprise on that front, but clearly a big setback for the government. The government already has announced additional 10 billion spending cuts for 2024 and suggested that additional 20 billion spending cuts would be found for 2025. But despite that, there's still a 0.3% gap between the government 2023 deficit and the 2024 deficit. So from that point of view, there is a likely slippage coming on the 4.4% deficit expected for 2024. Also, enacting restrictive measures could be challenging as Macron does not have a majority at the lower house. The risk is also that the fiscal trajectory is not consistent with the government objective of a return to sub 3% deficit by 2027. Our economists had already assumed some fiscal slippage, and hence our deficit forecast for 2024 is 4.7%. And we also have revised higher modestly the French government bond issuance targets for this year in light of that. The weakening fiscal picture in France also increases the risk of negative rating actions over the coming months. Rating agencies have been flagging that they could take negative actions on France on further deterioration of fiscal picture, which has materialized already. However, let's say Fitch, which currently rates France at AA- with a stable outlook, is the one which rates at the lowest rating among the top rating agencies. They had downgraded France already in April 2023, and in a recent commentary which they posted after the French deficit revision, they mentioned that it is unlikely that they will downgrade France to single A levels unless there's a material deterioration in fiscal picture from current levels. So from that point of view, we don't expect Fitch to do anything in the near term. The risk remains that Moody's, which has a review on 26th of April and have France rated AA2 with stable outlook, they might put a negative outlook or a downgrade. And similarly, S&P, which already has France on negative outlook with a AA rating, might downgrade them at their review on 31st of May. However, it is worth stressing that if Moody's or S&P does a rating downgrade, it will still bring the rating in line with current rating of Fitch, which is AA3. So from that point of view, I think there is no material, let's say, passive flow impact on the French ratings, from the French ratings, apart from the small sentiment effect. So overall, the French spreads have already widened sharply over the past 2 weeks. And given the recent underperformance of the French spreads, we believe that the market has already priced in the negative fiscal news and also potential negative rating action risk in the coming months. Therefore, we expect French spreads not to materially widen from current levels. We expect them to retain some of the recent underperformance versus other core, but at the same time, I don't expect them to materially continue underperforming from here. So I've turned neutral. I had recommended a long in 5 in Netherlands versus France to capture this fiscal noise, which has worked very well. But now at these levels, I've taken it off and turned more neutral on France.
Okay, that's pretty clear. Sounds like we're pretty much in the price. and there's not really a huge amount to play for going forward. But also we've had some fiscal noise in Italy as well. I mean, do you think there's anything different here? Is it a story that can lead to any material widening Italian spreads? And what's the view on BTPs?
Sure. So similarly, like the Italian economy minister commented this week that EU will open the excessive deficit procedure in Italy, along with several other countries, including France. This is not necessarily a surprise, as any country which has deficit above 3% has to be put under EDP, and Italy is expecting to run a deficit which is above 4% for 2024. Also, there have been media articles about fiscal slippage in Italy, mainly due to the expected take-up of fiscal incentive for greenhouse improvements, the Superbonus schemes. So I think it's already anticipated, even in our 2024 deficit forecast and also the issuance forecast, we are already assuming, let's say, 0.2, 0.3% slippage from the government official deficit forecast of around 4.3. So from that point of view, I think there's not much new in this news. Also, next week, the Italian government will publish a new budget update, which should contain some more information on the time part of the super bonus and the usage of tax credits. The recent news flow, however, also is suggesting that the Italian government is already taking steps to limit or even terminate the super bonus going forward. Also, recent news flow suggests that the Italian government is already taking steps to limit or even terminate the super bonus going forward. Similar to the French government, the Italian government has been talking prudently about curbing excessive spending and trying to find measures to reduce deficit debt over the medium term. Given the conservative and non-conflicting tone taken by the Meloni administration, I see limited risk of material widening Italian spreads just on the fiscal news. The fiscal noise could potentially act as an accelerant to a risk of tone-driven widening, but in itself, I don't think it's a big driver.
Right, thanks. So that's the first time you've had to talk about fiscal in Europe for a while. But let's shift to another topic again, Drew, that's probably something that's been a bit more persistent in terms of a theme that people have been focusing on, and that's swap spreads. Obviously, we've seen swap spreads narrowing significantly over the past few months. Maybe if you could just outline what you think the drivers have been, first of all, and then whether you think they can narrow further, and do you see anything interesting in terms of opportunities on the swap spread curve?
Thanks, Francis. So you're right. I mean, in my view, euro area swap spreads have been driven by a combination of structural and technical factors that have led to this sharp decline or sharp tightening in spreads over the last several months. Now, on the structural side, the shift to the easing regime from the ECB is, of course, supportive of easier financing conditions, which in turn supports tighter swap spreads. This is, you know, essentially a reverse of the dynamics that we had seen during the hiking cycle. Now, also the release of a significant amount of collateral into the euro system as euro area banks have repaid most of the TLTRO III borrowings and ECB has stopped APP purchases. That has led to a significant cheapening in funding rates and pushed swap spreads tighter. On the technical side, there has been receiving flows from European banks, especially in the intermediate sector, partly as a result of unwinding of hedges set up during the hiking cycle, and partly to hedge against expected decline in net interest income as ECB embarks on an easing cycle, well, hopefully from June, if our view is right. Also, higher than average swap issuance activity in the first quarter of this year has also, as I said, aided to this dynamic. So it has been a perfect storm of these factors that has led to tighter spreads. Can spreads narrow further? On this, I expect some divergence in the dynamic of swap spreads across the curve. At the front end, we are biased towards wider Schatz Estes swap spread, which are hovering close to their lows and are cheap in our fair value models. Our widening view is mainly driven by our expectation of richening in funding rates as the German RFR Estes specialness is just about 2 to 3 basis points. And in my view, risk reward supports richening of these funding rates and therefore wider spreads. Also, Schatz widener offer a convex, cheap convex hedge to any flare up of risk off dynamics and widening in peripheral spreads. In contrast, we favor narrowers in the intermediate sector and are biased towards bond narrowers, especially on any re-widening from current levels. As I mentioned previously, this is primarily on the back of those receiving flows that I was mentioning earlier that we're expecting to come from European banks. Anecdotally, Southern European banks have already started these NII hedging flows to some extent, and could and will likely to continue on as we get closer to the easing cycle. And this could be accelerated further as the French and German banks also join, especially when the ECB starts to cut rates, which should reduce the negative carry from received positions, which is what is a deterrent for some of these banks to start on this flow already. Now, finally, we have a widening bias at the ultra long end, which we have expressed via a Bund-Buxel swap spread steepening bias and expressing via a 10-year forward, 20-year forward spread widener. This is essentially a proxy to 10-30 swap curve steepening view, which could also be supported from interest from real money investors in expressing long duration views via bonds instead of swaps, as they are now, as these bonds are now trading through swaps on the ESTR curve. So to answer your questions, yes, overall, we are narrower spreads in the intermediate and wider spreads on the wings.
Thanks. So let's shift gears again to another area of the rates market that's been in focus, which is volatility, and particularly your area of volatility, Kigendra. I mean, it's pretty clear we've seen a sort of a one-way sort of decline in vol over the past few weeks, reaching cycle lows, which is probably contrary to what normally you'd expect to see as you approach an easing cycle. So why do you think the typical template of rising volatility as we approach an easing cycle, which we think we are approaching, is not really playing out this time? And do you have a particular recommendation in volatility space you think looks attractive here?
Yes, we actually published a note earlier today dissecting the drivers of euro area rates volatility over the recent month. So if I were to summarize that note, volatility has been declining due to an array of factors. First, macroeconomic volatility, by this I mean both GDP and inflation volatility, has subsided significantly over the last few months, and this itself warrants lower risk premium. Second, ECB's somewhat strong guidance that rate cuts will begin in June has also removed some near-term risk. Beyond the first cut, money market curves, in my view, appears to be fairly priced, at least for 2024 and 2025. On this, we believe that the terminal rates are biased lower from current levels, but the journey is likely to be smoother and gradual. And this is this wording, smoothing, smoother and gradual, that is what is keeping volatility low. Third, there is a less disagreement amongst ECB members currently within the board, which had been a source of uncertainty in the past, leading to higher volatility, and the current coherence in their language has supported lower volatility. Now, you asked that the template of an easing which supports rising volatility is not being followed this time around. And this is, I think, primarily for the reason that easing cycles in the past have been motivated by imminent recession fears. If we look back at Lehman or the 2001 crisis, or even in 2019, when the Fed was embarking on easing cycles, they were all motivated by imminent risk of recessions, which leads to macro uncertainty and obviously uncertain movement from the central banks. Now, this time around, we are not expecting a recession, or a recession is not in our forecast for the next 12 to 18 months. So that has taken away that risk completely from the equation, which by itself should warrant lower risk premium, and has led to implieds coming lower as opposed to what you would typically see implieds blowing up and long gamma positions being supportive, starting a few weeks to a couple of months before the before the first easing. So, beyond this, yields have also been moving in a range and exhibiting large degree of mean reversion. This has encouraged program sellers for gamma to benefit from infrequent delta hedging of their short positions. That has also helped with keeping volatility down. So in my view, all of these factors are likely to stay over the coming weeks and keep volatility suppressed. More importantly, while implieds probably have only little room to decline further, we do expect delivered volatility to stay muted in the absence of a catalyst that can move these sustainably higher. To position for this, we like shorts in unhedged straddles, especially in the long end. So we have been recommending shorts in unhedged straddles in 6 month tenure, which in our view offers attractive breakevens, and I continue to hold this trade. We also like shorts in 30-year tails, again on an unhedged basis, to benefit from the mean reversion that is currently reflected in the yields. Now, Francis, let's turn to energy markets and inflation. Brent oil prices have risen above $90 per barrel, and our commodity team had highlighted risks that oil at $100 per barrel was possible later this year. How is this impacting inflation markets, and what opportunities do you see in inflation space?
Definitely an interesting area. I mean, I think, first of all, when we look at our forecast from our econ team, which have got headline HICP getting down to around about 2.6 in the second quarter and then down to around 2.3 in the fourth quarter, that already incorporates Brent at 90. So I think, first of all, Kagendra, to your sort of general question here, in terms of that's probably in our forecast and to some degree maybe in inflation market forecasts already. I do think, yes, if you get oil shifting higher towards 100, which, as you mentioned, the commodity team had highlighted, that probably does add a little bit of upside risk to breakevens at the front end of the curve. Although I do think it's probably worth noting, as our commodity team highlighted, that there are some expected mitigating factors on that journey, which may well mean we don't necessarily see the 100 level. I mean, that could be the US releasing some of the strategic oil reserve. That could be other policy measures, but also some sense that demand destruction may start to occur as you sort of make the journey from $90 to $100 a barrel. So I do think there is some relevance for inflation markets, although I wouldn't say the way we're thinking about things here, that means we are immediately saying we need to be hedging this risk directly. When you look at the very front end of the inflation curve, we put out a piece a couple of weeks ago looking at betas to oil. Yes, you do see increased betas at the front end of the break-even curve to energy, although that's more a US tips dynamic than a European dynamic. And further out, if you say take 5-year, 5-year, you don't really see a huge beta or correlation effect over the past few months. And I don't think that will change necessarily. Front-end break-evens have been relatively range-bound. I think we would say hovering around the 2% level in some of the shorter-end break-evens. There should be a little bit of upside risk, so I think we would have a bit of a bullish bias. But I think we'd probably prefer that kind of view through being long front-end real rates in Europe, basically picking up the idea that if we are approaching an ECB easing cycle, probably real yields should do some of the work in terms of rallying as we approach that starting point. And also it gives us a little bit of protection around the uncertainty of a bit of a sticky service inflation backdrop, elevated wage growth, and as you mentioned, some risks that oil could move higher still. But I wouldn't say that's the main motivating factor behind that view. But that pretty much summarizes where we are in inflation space. So anyway, thanks to both of you, Aditya and Kagendra. We've covered quite a lot of topics. Hopefully it's been useful to our listeners. But to summarize, we don't really think the ECB in April meeting will be a big event for European rate markets. We've neutralized our underweight in France, as we believe the recent fiscal news is already priced. In swap spreads, it's a bit of a mixed bag of views. We like wideners at the front end of the curve and narrows in 10-year space. We favor short volatility positions in European vol. And in inflation, we have a long view in the front end of the real rates curve. Well, that's all from us. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more updates on fixed income space here on At Any Rates, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast Series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read the JP Morgan Research reports related to its contents. And for more information, including important disclosures, copyright 2024, JP Morgan Chase & Co., all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on April 5th, 2024.